pulling back the curtain of silence
and learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen, Brown-Eyed Activism.
Healing at the intersections.
So much of this topic is unknown and unknowable. What a way to start, right?
I know. That's like, it's so...
Mystery.
Alluring.
Intrigue. But okay, there are a few things that we do know. So we know that spirituality is associated with positive health outcomes for women of color. We know that it can help reduce stress, depression, anxiety, chronic pain, and cardiovascular illnesses, among other things. We know that it has been shown to lengthen people's lives on a similar level as eating high amounts of fruits and vegetables or taking blood pressure medications. And we know that for a lot of people, it fosters healing and life-affirming feelings like hope, compassion, and gratitude. And perhaps most importantly, we know that Beyonce and Rihanna are both highly spiritual, both in the fact that they're dedicated to spiritual practices and the fact that they are literal goddesses.
Fight us about that.
Yes. No one would, though, because it's indisputable.
Yeah, obviously.
But, okay, we also know that a lot of us feel a strong aversion to spirituality.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
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 Yes. And we know that many of us have experienced huge amounts of harm at the hands of organized religion, which for many people is the primary vehicle of spirituality. So we want to take a deeper look at the role that spirituality plays in our lives as Black and Brown folks. We want to know why we might be drawn to it and why we might be turned off of it. We want to know what it might offer us and what we might want to avoid altogether. So let's start by talking about what spirituality actually is and how it differs from organized religion. We can start to look at definitions other people have offered, but let's start with ourselves and what our understandings are. So Nick, how do you understand what spirituality is? Or when I say the word spirituality, what do you think of?
So I think when I was younger, spirituality felt like it was like some like hippy dippy white people thing to do. But yeah. That's changed. Like, my understanding of spirituality has changed, like, a lot since then. We'll get into that. But for me, I think it just means, like, a deep sense of awareness, connectedness to something bigger. And it's not so much, like, the touchy... I mean, it can be very personal and, like, touchy-feely, but I think I've changed my perception of what touchy-feely is. So it's not... It no longer has this, like, negative connotation anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, spirituality is just about being a part of a greater whole. And it's really that simple for me. It doesn't come along with a lot of beliefs, certainly not dogmatic beliefs.
Yeah, it's not like all that baggage that maybe some of us have. Maybe.
Right, some maybe. Yeah, it's just a feeling of being connected and part of something. Mastin Kipp has described spirituality as, quote, a measure of how willing we are to allow grace, some power greater than ourselves, to enter into our lives and guide us along our way. Is that, if as far as you know, is that in line with what the Christian understanding of grace is? I've never really known what people mean when they say
yeah,
grace.
Yeah, grace is, like, from years growing up in the church,
yeah.
My understanding of grace has always just been, like, something that we as humans, as sinful people, as people who do, like, wrong, as people who aren't close to God, are given through being in relationship with God. And so grace is, like, the opposite of justice in the sense that we deserve wrongdoing. We deserve harm. We deserve,
yikes.
Or not, maybe not even, like, harm, but, like, we deserve the things... Oh, God, this is, like, getting into, like, the depths of my, like, old Christian soul. And, like,
sounds like it.
But grace is something that essentially, like, human beings, like, don't deserve. Like, in terms of scripture, grace is something that, like, God gives freely and willingly to all those who, like, come to him. That's my understanding of grace.
Right.
So, like, even, and, like, you know,
that makes
in
it
our
sound
notes.
So much less appealing.
Oh, it's so much
sounded
appealing. And honestly, even, even still, like, even in our notes, you have grace with a capital G. I'm like, oh, it's just like, because in my mind,
flashbacks.
It's like divine grace. And that is something that I've always struggled with understanding how I fit into. Like, it's just messy.
Yeah.
It's really different than this. This is a great, like, I appreciate
this. Yeah, this one makes,
like,
me feel so good.
It
reminds me of feelings that I've had that are associated with a sense of calm and a sense of everything being okay and being, like, very much loved in a
yeah
in a positive way. I think we're going to talk more about different understandings of love. But
I think that some like some people who practice Christianity, for example, because that's my own like right. that's my only kind of proximity to religion, organized religion.
What what denomination of Christian?
I grew up going to like a non-denominational church. It was like very African, very black, but then it was more Pentecostal.
Okay.
So I grew up going to a church where people would speak in tongues and things like, you know, it was very charismatic. It was very, and I think it probably lended to the fact that they were just a bunch of black people. Right. Like that there's some, and like a huge population of the church was black African folks. And I think that kind of changed the way that our church, like growing up, functioned. It was not like other churches that I had gone to when I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to talk more about your experience growing up. Let's get back to as much as we can. So another definition of spirituality, though, Maya Spencer says, quote, "Spirituality involves the recognition of a feeling or sense or belief that there is something greater than myself, something more to being human than sensory experience, and that the greater whole of which we are part is cosmic or divine in nature. Spirituality means knowing that our lives have significance in a context beyond a mundane everyday existence at the level of biological needs that drive selfishness and aggression. It means knowing that we are a significant part of a purposeful unfolding of life in our universe."
Well, la-di-da. That's like a very, no, that's like a meaty, really like weighty understanding of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah, I like a lot of things. I like that it talks about cosmic as someone who really has a strong relationship with astrology.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that there's a purposeful unfolding of life and that we're a significant part of it, even though we're a tiny part of it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to get clear on how that's different from organized religion. So I would describe organized religions as institutions of spiritual practice, and like any system or institution, there is some examples of how it's positive and supportive for some people, but there's also a lot of examples where it's hierarchical and oppressive and the site of violence and abuses of power, and obviously marginalized folks are especially likely to have those kinds of experiences. So women of all demographics, queer and trans folks, racialized folks, the list goes on.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, growing up in the church, practicing Christianity, my experience was more along the lines of like religiousness, piousness, measuring yourself up against what other people were doing. And organized religion is oftentimes this space, especially in religions where there's congregations and you're sharing community with people who all supposedly believe the same things. There's this element of like performing.
Right.
How you're supposed to be. And I guess for me, it was always that turned me off.
Yeah, it's interesting because so much of what I've learned about spirituality, it feels to me like the whole point of it is putting your ego aside, which is not just ego in the sense that we think of like arrogance, but even beyond that, just like the idea of yourself as the personality and, you know, the form that we're in right now, like
right.
the identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what you're describing, it just sounds like ego run amok, you know?
Oh.
That idea of being better and measuring yourself against each other, to me, that's like the opposite of the point of spiritual
You would
practice.
Think, and I think that's the like the crux of, I think, for me, in my experience with religion, is that in theory, all these things are awesome, but it's people, right? People,
yes. Yeah.
People are the ones who kind of add the flavor,
yeah,
so to speak. And that's just putting it nicely. But people are the ones who can contort and misinterpret and like wield religion and all of the, you know, the things that can be beautiful about it and twist it to serve their own purposes. So like you're saying, like, yeah, it's, you would think that the ego would be something that was put aside, but for me, in my experiences, it's always been something that was very frontline and center, was ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in case it wasn't already incredibly clear, we're coming from extremely different backgrounds
very
on
different.
This topic.
Yes.
So I wasn't raised with any religion at all, but you were very much raised in the church, you went to Christian school, all of that.
Yeah.
And I know this about you and it comes up all the time, and yet I still just struggle to imagine it. Like I can't.
Oh yeah.
Like,
it's funny because I feel like there's been so many iterations of myself. I've been reincarnated like 17,000 times. There was Church Nicole. So yeah, like I grew up in the church. I taught Sunday school in my teenage years. I was a camp counselor. counselor at Vacation Bible School, which is like summer camp for Christian kids. I was going to youth group. I was singing in choirs. I was attending Christian school from grades 4 through 12. Was very involved in like our school's chapel team, which like my friends from high school will absolutely make fun of me. They're like, she used to sing praise and worship songs in front of the whole school.
Is that what the worship team is? I think you mentioned worship team before, and I was like, what even?
Oh yeah, that's what it is. So okay. It's kind of like, imagine church, but within the context of school. So there's like an hour period where you have people singing, and then you might have somebody that comes and gives like a word or a sermon, and it might be like a youth pastor from a local church or something like that. So I was deep in it.
So you can you like sing? Can you like sing for real?
I can sing. I grew up singing in choirs. I sing on this podcast all the time.
I know. But I want to hear you like.
Remember
fully...
when I was singing "You've Never Really Fucked a Woman"?
That's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, that was a bop. But yeah, like I don't know. As a kid, church was kind of my second home, but it was the people in it, like I mentioned, that I found so damn challenging. I saw nepotism and favoritism, and people treated better than others because of their proximity to people in positions of leadership. You know, I saw the same types of power plays that you can imagine in executive board meetings happening between deacons and people in churches. And so it was that, like the people part of it. But I also personally felt so othered. And this is despite the fact that I went to a predominantly black church as a kid. Later on in our teenage years, I moved to a more kind of mixed race church. But it wasn't about the people that were there necessarily. It was just that I felt so unworthy and so filled with shame and so scared of hell. And that was something, like all of those feelings were rampant throughout all of adolescenthood up until the end of high school.
Right. Yeah. So if you're so scared of hell, did you believe in, you believed in God?
I think I believed in God. I remember feeling a sense of presence, like I don't know how to describe it, but there's something about gospel music, there's something about being in a room full of so many other people who really believe something. It's contagious, right? Like it makes you feel a type of way deeply, profoundly, in a way that you can't describe. It's an intangible thing. But I think for me, those experiences happened, but they were so few and far between that I guess I just kind of believed it because everybody else was believing it. My whole family was, you know, practicing Christian. All of my friends were practicing Christian. Like there wasn't really an escape until I was done high school.
Right. So you had moments where you did feel kind of a presence of God, but in general, you didn't feel a very close relationship.
Yeah, I felt like exactly. And I think so much of the not feeling closeness with God or not feeling what stemmed from me kind of marking myself up against this barometer of what a good Christian was and me feeling super, like I mentioned, like super unworthy, like a lot of shame. And all of that really stemmed from my feelings about my body and my sexuality and it being and being intrigued and being interested in understanding sex, you know, especially as a teenager. So much of my experiences growing up, looking back at it now with friends that I am still in relationship with from high school, who, you know, went to Christian school and like went to church and did all the same kinds of things that I did, was the amount of shame that going, like being in those circles, you're in a bubble. You're in a complete bubble where you're not able to see whether or not like what you're experiencing is what other people are experiencing. And there's not these open forms of dialogue where we can talk about, how are we all faring? Are we all really believing this shit?
Yeah.
You know, that's not part of the Christian school tuition.
No,
they're somehow. Mom's not paying for that enough. Shit. So
yeah. So I'm imagining this must have affected your ideas of whether or not spirituality could be something that was like a supportive or a positive part of your life.
Yeah, I think
after you left the church, I'm imagining.
Oh God,
it must have not exactly made you want to look for spirituality.
Not at all. I remember as soon as I stopped facing any resistance from my parents about not going to church, which was probably the 12th grade, I just stopped going. I didn't even open a Bible. I wasn't thinking about it. I was like, take that shit, put it out of your mind. It was very much like, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm coming from basically the exact opposite
direction. Yeah, yeah.
So I grew up living with my grandparents, my mom, and my grandparents, to my understanding, were like fully atheists.
No way. What was their like ethnicity? What was their cultural
background? White. Yeah. And then my parents, like my dad's whole side of the family, going back like really far was Syrian Christian. I always hoped, like, is there a more interesting religion on my Indian side? But
false.
No, there is not. But my dad is like extremely atheist. He's like the most atheist.
Really?
And oh yeah, because he's super intellectual and is just like has
no time
or patience for anything remotely spiritual.
Really?
And then my mom says she's always been spiritual, but she never really talked about it or tried to transmit it to me in any way. So yeah, there was kind of this like void there for me, and I always felt a pull towards spirituality, even though, like, I don't know why, I wasn't raised to value it or think about it, but I was always sort of yearning for that dimension in my life. Like, I was always very curious about it, but because I was raised to identify so strongly with my intellectual mind, I was super skeptical.
And like, no, that's fair.
Yeah, for like a lot of my life, I actually had a lot of angst about the belief in my rational mind that there wasn't a God. I felt distressed about that.
Yeah. It's so fascinating that you mention, like, your natural path was the intellectualism route.
Yeah.
And it made you feel anxious to think about, like, what about this kind of unknown? What about the spiritual? Whereas for me, my experience was I yearned for the intellectual route. Like, I yearned for people to explain the facts that were written in the Bible. Like, if Noah was this old, if he was 700 years old, what was his skin like? Like, my younger sister asked my mom that one time, and she didn't know what to say. Like, but like, and you know what I mean? Like, all the things that I knew were, it was faith. It was just unexplainable.
Right.
So I was like, but how? But why? And so it's interesting that we have such like very different entry points to even coming to or walking away from spirituality or religion, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny too, because, okay, so astrology, I have my North Node in Pisces, and one of the interpretations of that placement is that I need to learn spirituality in my life, and that some interpretations would be that I've spent a lot of past life like judging the airy fairy types, and now I need to be that
you
type
need that.
Which is hilarious.
That's kind of
that
funny
is, like,
that is you
how my route has been.
The ancestors are like cackling at you.
Yeah. So then, okay, the first place that I actually started to find a way to explore spirituality was through Oprah. So I watched her show a lot in my teens and 20s, just by myself. I wasn't even, like, allowed to watch Oprah for most of my life. I just started watching it once someone was paying attention.
Nice.
And she always had a really strong spiritual orientation, and, like, she would always talk about spirituality with guests and bring spiritual teachers onto the show.
That's kind of funny that you mentioned Oprah, because I remember watching her as a kid. My mom always had her on. But then there was this moment, I remember going to church and listening to Christian radio, because, like, we were that house at, like, at our house, we were playing Christian radio, we go to Christian school, and it's Christian. But anyways, I remember this, like, this very clear sentiment that people who took to Oprah so strongly were following some sort of, like, false idol. And in Christianity, there's the Ten Commandments, and one of them is, like, you shouldn't have another God before the Lord your God. And so, like, there was this very strong, but people were like, think about it. It's not surprising. The kinds of people who were the most critical of Oprah in the Christian sphere were, like, elder white men who were saying, like, stop listening to this, like, successful black woman about how to live your life, like, read the Bible.
So I think Oprah, she uses Christian language.
Yes.
And she has a sort of sense that it's all the same, but her language that she uses for it is Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand how there's a lot of Christians are like, no, it's not all the same.
It's not.
There's one true religion.
Exactly. And one true denomination. Like
yes,
you said.
Totally.
Yeah.
But her whole way of approaching life that she brought to the masses through her show is deeply spiritual and still pro-freedom and pro-science and all of that. Mm. But it's that idea that there is this higher power, and that spiritual practice is what helps you move past, like I said before, your ego and align with that bigger purpose. And that's a feeling I've started to experience in the last couple of years. So I'm curious if you felt it too and how you understand it for yourself, because I actually heard India Ari talking about this on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah one day, but I had never experienced it when I saw the show. And I don't know if she had a name for it, but I call it alignment. And the way I experience it, it's like this feeling of intense presence, and I get the chills, and I feel like my eyes are welling up, and it's just this sense of, like, rightness, that whatever I'm doing or wherever I am or whatever ideas are coming to me, whatever connection I'm making in that moment is in alignment with this greater whole, or I'm on this, like, I'm in the right place of where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
Have you had a feeling like that? Or
I think I've had that feeling. I've had more of that feeling in the past maybe 2 years than I ever had practicing Christianity, because I felt like such a faker. Like, I felt like I wasn't really being a good enough Christian, an authentic enough Christian, and I felt like God knew that I wasn't, like, doing it proper. I was just like, somebody can tell, and it's God, and I'm going to hell. And, you know, with so much fear in your heart, I think it's not surprising that I didn't feel alignment. Like, there's this Bible verse. I'm so sorry that I'm quoting things, but
no,
I think this,
I
is, this is part of, like, the problem for me, or was part of the problem for me, was something to the effect of, even as much as you think the thought, that is still just as bad as actually committing the sin. And so, like, you know, thinking about being curious about sex as a 13-year-old, you're like, okay, well, I've committed adultery then.
Oh, my God.
And so it's, like, creating these false equivalences. It's like, and it's just, for me, it was mind control and fear-mongering were two things that really, like, did a lot of damage.
Yeah.
As I've gotten older and moved away from organized religion, I've been able to understand that, you know, this alignment feeling that you're describing is this deep sense of knowing myself, knowing where I stand, knowing my purpose, you know, seeing myself as something bigger, but not in relation to God, in relation to other people. Like, that has been something that's been a real shift for me. Like, religion, Christianity always felt like it was like me and God. And God knew what was going on in my head, and I had to prove to him that I wasn't that asshole. And I've divested so much from that, and now I spend so much more energy thinking about, like, how am I relating to people here and now? Because there might be some dude in the sky, there might not be, but what I know for sure, quoting Oprah, is there are people around me who deserve certain things, and I just became more compelled to focus on that than something that was so external that I didn't even know or see it. And that omnipresentness of what God was or meant to me at the time was just not something that was, like, supportive or welcoming with open arms or non-judgmental or, you know, so.
Yeah, it's honestly so heartbreaking to me that organized religion, which is supposed to support spirituality and be this vehicle for spirituality, is such a huge barrier to spirituality for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And then another barrier. So Oprah was a big spiritual influence for me, but it was also the first place, her show was also the first place I experienced something that I know is a barrier for a lot of people of color to participating in spirituality, and that's whiteness. And
surprise.
Yeah, the way that a lot of white folks use spiritual concepts to maintain white supremacy specifically. So it's not that Oprah herself necessarily does these things, I don't know, but a lot of her viewers did. So one example is the idea of the law of attraction, which is, and I'm sure this is super oversimplified and not actually what the original spiritual principle was, but the way it's talked about is that it's the idea that your thoughts create your reality and you manifest the energy you put out into the world. So there's a lot of white folks who use that to justify their privilege. Like, I'm wealthy because I have good energy and you're poor because you don't. Or, like, you shouldn't be angry because you're putting negativity out into the world and that's why your life sucks and positive vibes only, you know?
Oh,
like,
God.
Have you...
When you're mentioning, you know, I'm wealthy because I'm positive or whatever the fuck. Yeah. I was talking to my partner's sister yesterday and she was like, she was describing some punchline of a comic that was saying something to the effect of, maybe I manifested it, maybe it's white privilege. And she was like, I mean,
spoiler alert,
it's white privilege, you know? But, you know, my experiences with my own spirituality have been so new and so personal. And because my more religious years were surrounded by lots of people of color, I think experiences were different than yours. Because it wasn't like white folks that were saying and doing those, like, be positive kinds of things. It was more along the lines of, if something bad was happening, people were kind of like, it's God's will.
Right.
You know, and this was always prefaced with, like, prayer, which is, you know, manifesting what you want through communication with God. So it's a similar phenomenon, but different people.
Right. Yeah. Like, so we're all definitely very capable of it. I mean, people of color, we live in denial of all kinds of things.
Like, oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people of color in denial about the genocide of Indigenous people that's happening in Canada and has been happening in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of wanting to ignore, you know, homophobia and transphobia and just not wanting to be with our feelings. Like, yeah, when something really scary is happening, like somebody gets a really scary diagnosis or somebody dies, and wanting to just make it okay instead of being able to really sit with the grief or the anger.
Yeah, exactly.
The shock or the fear, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So this seems like a good time to talk about the concept of spiritual bypassing. So teach apparently, me. Yes, this concept apparently is attributed to a psychologist named John Wellwood. So he noticed that there was a tendency in some Buddhist communities that he had spent time around to use these spiritual principles or ideas in order to avoid difficult or painful feelings or emotional wounds. And so I think for a lot of brown and black folks, there's such a negative association with spirituality because of how many white people use it for this kind of avoidance. And again, like we're saying, it's not just white people who do this, but there is a very particular phenomenon of white folks who like cherry pick MLK quotes and invoke love and light. Yes. But it's this defanged love, like this love without fangs that turns away from suffering and tolerates abuse and oppression in order to just avoid conflict.
Yes.
Which is not what MLK was about.
No, come on, y'all.
Yeah, and in my opinion, it's not what spirituality asks of us, and it's not what love is. But there's also this sense of superiority that seems to come along with spiritual bypassing. Like, I'm more evolved than you because I am perfectly calm and you're angry. And in the Canadian context, looking at this genocide, and instead of feeling grief and anger and the overwhelming urge to do something to fix it, you're judging the victims for being angry or saying they're being dramatic or it's not really that bad. Like, that to me is more sociopathic than it is spiritual.
It's not spiritual. And I think what you're getting at is like, my earliest experiences with spirituality and with organized religion has always involved the requirement of compliance and following, you know?
Mm.
And when you start to poke the bear, so to speak, and ask tough questions or express skepticism or question, like even questioning, like, why the fuck is this happening to me? You're met with derision, you're met with chastisement, you're met with this feeling like you're not supposed to be thinking critically, you know, you're supposed to believe things, you're supposed to follow blindly, quote unquote, you know, whatever the Lord says, whatever the Lord wants. That's like the point of it all. And I think what's harmful is what you've just spoken about, you know, the sense of gaslighting the very people who are the most marginalized with this type of just be positive response. Like, being positive isn't enough, you know, for so many of us, positive words, hopes and prayers, good intentions, etc. Those aren't enough to, you know, solve the manifestations of harm, bigotry, racism, and all the other isms. Picking and choosing when you're going to implement or, you know, make good on your quote unquote spiritual beliefs,
yes,
does not make you spiritual.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. So let's talk about what a different kind of spirituality could look like. And I have an example that I would love for us to dive into. So Michelle Alexander, I first heard of her, I'm pretty sure, in Dahlia Douglas's amazing class that we both took.
Dahlia Black Douglas!
Black African Women in the Americas.
I'm saying, Dahlia Douglas is a G, just want to say that.
Yes.
Continue.
And in that class, we studied the groundbreaking and multiple award-winning book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in an Age of Colorblindness. And that book has been profoundly influential in proving that mass incarceration in the U.S. is an intentional act of anti-Black violence that mirrors the effects of the Jim Crow system.
Mm.
But a few years ago, Michelle announced that she was going to be leaving her position as a law professor for seminary school. And I find this absolutely fascinating. So I want to just ask the question, why would an intellectual and a leading activist like Michelle Alexander make that kind of professional shift? So here's a part of the statement that she released to explain her decision. I have generally found more questions than answers in my own religious or spiritual pursuits. But I also know there is something much greater at stake in justice work than we often acknowledge. Solving the crises we face isn't simply a matter of having the right facts, graphs, policy analyses, or funding. And I no longer believe we can win justice simply by filing lawsuits, flexing our political muscles, or boosting voter turnout. Yes, we absolutely must do that work, but none of it, not even working for some form of political revolution, will ever be enough on its own. Without a moral or spiritual awakening, we will remain forever trapped in political games fueled by fear, greed, and the hunger for power. This is not simply a legal problem or a political problem or a policy problem. At its core, America's journey from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration raises profound moral and spiritual questions about who we are, individually and collectively, who we aim to become, and what we are willing to do now. I have found that these questions are generally not asked or answered in law schools or policy roundtables. So I'm going to a place that takes very seriously the moral, ethical, and spiritual dimensions of justice work, Union Theological Seminary.
Oh.
Yeah. So do you have any initial thoughts? Like, what came up for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to go to a seminary, you better, like, have this type of fucking energy.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for her. She didn't say it, but she's speaking to my earlier comment about, you know, having that critical lens. And I think she mentioned it, like, it's not enough. There's certain things that just aren't quite cutting it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And having that critical lens and applying it through spirituality, through healing work that's bigger than yourself. You know, mm-hmm. I'd have to agree with her comments on what's missing. You know, so often we talk about having this moral imperative to do something, you know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think for so many of us, morality is like, what that? Who it is? No one else. We're not sure what the fuck that's up. Like, we don't know, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not saying that any certain religion necessarily offers a just, compassionate morality that is needed in our day and age, but I think she's really onto something when she's talking about, you know, that those intersections of justice work and spiritual work.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think that you have to look at, if you have these certain spiritual principles and you look at the world, you have to see that there's a very intense and violent dissonance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So then
how do you explain away things like racism, sexism, homophobia? Like, how does that?
Right. And then wouldn't those spiritual principles necessitate doing some, like, standing up against those things?
You would think so.
Right?
You would think so. And I think, you know, her point, you know, we can legislate our faces off and do all this work to correct the harms brought to us through institutions like the police, like government. But one, how do we get to the root of the thing? Like, how do we, you know, get to a place where we actually change hearts and minds? And then two, these institutions that we're trying to legislate our faces off, and they were always inherently created to harm us.
Right.
So are we taking crumbs when we're doing this work, or are we making some real shifts? I think there's room for so many different approaches to how we succeed. But I think it's really beautiful that she's committed herself to, in my mind, like, if this is the way that she's entering seminary school, mm-hmm. I hope she keeps that energy, because I think that's really revolutionary.
Yeah, because, you know? I think, like you're saying about these institutions, for so many people, that's kind of all we know. Like, that's what structures our entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, spirituality, it allows you to think bigger than that and think beyond that and not have this allegiance to the state just because that's what you've known as, like, the higher power in your life.
Yeah, I think that the cool thing about spirituality is that it doesn't operate on the principle of, like, scarcity. Mm. Like, things like the police and things like these institutions are always operating and, like, there's only a finite amount of, so you can only have. And whereas something like spirituality is so expansive, it's not about, like, how many of it, how much of it, it's within yourself. It's something that's inherently personally regenerative. It doesn't rely on resources from other people. And I think there's something really powerful about that.
Yes, you know? Totally. And then I think a big part of why the story is so captivating to me is that it's the exact opposite of that defanged love.
Oh, totally.
Like, that empty, meaningless spirituality that claims to be enlightened when it's really just enjoying the comfort of your privilege bubble, when that bubble was created and is maintained through devastating violence and destruction.
Yes. Yes.
Right? It's like, it's not.
It's like call to action type spirituality.
Exactly. So then you have to ask, like, what if instead of being used as a way to bypass pain and anger or ignore difficult realities or gaslight people who are suffering by telling them to just, like, calm down and be grateful and practice so-called love, what if spirituality offered us a way to stay anchored to higher values and principles and envision something better than we could ever imagine just by looking at the world around us as we've known it?
I mean, yeah, what if? Like, what if?
Yeah. Could you see yourself incorporating spirituality into your activism?
I don't know. I think there's so many things that I'm trying to actively unlearn.
Right.
From, like, around religion. Yeah. With respect to it being intertwined with my activism, understanding my natal chart and, like, understanding, like, who I am in the context of astrology has just given me more resources and tools to know myself, to be able to, like, make good on the feelings that I have inside of me. Like, the things that I couldn't explain before about how I experience the world have been, I don't want to say solved, but I've gotten this language through, you know, through intersectional feminism and also through something like astrology where you're able to really know self.
Right.
And focus on self. So I think
whether it was like an explicit part of your activism, it's helping you to show up as the person you need to be in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
That makes sense. So yeah, let's get into that more, because there is maybe a lot of people who might have an openness or curiosity towards spirituality or may want that in their lives in some way, but it can be kind of daunting sometimes, whether you're coming from where I was coming from, which is just having absolutely no familiarity with any of it, or coming from where you've been coming from, yeah, where you've had these like really negative experiences.
Totally.
So yeah, let's talk about astrology, because that's been something really important for me as well. And the more I've learned about astrology, the more I've been unable to deny that there's something to it.
Yes.
Like, I don't know why.
There is.
Yeah.
There really is. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know why it should work. I just know that it does. Somehow.
Yeah, I would agree.
First of all, it gave me language for things that I didn't have language for before, which just helps you to know things and to work with things. It also gave me the sense of acceptance about myself.
Right. You're no longer like trying to. I remember you did a chart reading for me, and it was something about this inherent duality that I have in my nature.
Right.
And one thing that you said that really stuck with me, it was, you are not either or, it's both and.
Right.
And it was just so amazing. Like, that for me was so transformative, because I had spending so much energy and time being like, why am I this way? Why do I do this and then do this? Why? Da, 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 da. And I was able to just like close the book and be like, I can know my nature and it's definitive and it's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because the moon sign often is like a bit more hidden. It's how you see yourself, but it's not necessarily the self you always show to the world or the self, right, other people would say about you. And yeah. I think I was saying that in regards to your Gemini moon.
Yeah,
moon.
Exactly.
And for me, same with my Leo moon, there were things about that I think I just was maybe embarrassed about, or like thought were bad qualities, you know, like being prideful or like wanting attention, things like that, that I'm kind of like, it's
like,
embarrassing.
No, I doubt.
Yeah. But then I see it in my birth chart and I'm like, oh, it's okay. Like, that's just part of how I am. And it's okay. Like, I need to let myself shine in my own way.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which is
totally
what a Leo moon is all about. So it's partly learning about the birth chart, but then especially keeping up with transits and progressions, which are about how the celestial bodies are moving now and how that's affecting you in your chart. Mm. That really keeps me in touch with the sense of being a part of a greater whole, right? Because it's
totally.
Sort of, it's this sense that there is this bigger thing happening and I'm feeling it happen and allowing me to work with it.
Right. Instead of fighting against it.
Yeah. I've read the idea that transits are the universe getting you in tune. Mm. So they kind of put pressure on you in order to kind of get you more aligned.
Oh God, I've been going through a transit. I don't know if you've been looking at my chart recently,
no,
but like some shit's been bubbling up.
What's happening?
Oh, just so much. We'll talk about it afterwards, but
okay,
like there's been feelings. There's been big feelings that and I know it's like been refining me as a person, but holy fucking shit.
Yeah. And it's honestly been so intense for so many people.
But in addition to it being really terrifying, I really loved it. Like you said, for those of us with experiences with organized religion that requires like rule following, I found that understanding your natal chart and astrology has generally been so freeing. You know, there's no rules against which you're judged. And as an Aquarius, I love that shit, because I'm like, fuck rules. Why do we have them? And so, yeah, like spirituality in my mind should always be a tool towards freedom.
Yeah.
And in my own experiences, I don't know if it's possible to get there by following a religion that was like perpetuated by white people.
Yeah, because this is the thing, like
Christianity.
Like, yeah, spirituality, religion, any of these things are there. I do believe that there is something bigger than us that can get channeled through us, but it is getting channeled through people, like
exactly.
You've said, and when it is getting channeled through
harmful
white
people,
men who have at times been extremely abusive and oppressive, I think one of the big issues with the way spirituality has been interpreted in religion is that not only does it end up justifying power over, abuses of power, oppression, all those things, it aligns with values that I think are inherently anti-spiritual, like individualism.
Right.
Right. And I think that that's a big way that the spiritual ideas that we try to engage with are a reason why they don't work. So, for example, this idea that grace works through you to get you on the path you're supposed to be doing and doing the work you're supposed to be doing, it's not just an individual thing, because I think there's a lot of Black and brown folks and, you know, queer and trans people who get those messages and try to do that thing and get stamped out by people in power, right? It's like, it's not you getting in the way necessarily of grace or of the alignment or of the higher power. It's the oppressive forces in the world getting in the way.
Yeah, right? And I think the difficulty with religion oftentimes is that, like, it's weird, because I was talking about how astrology is, like, so individual, but I want to say that's more like it's internal. It's about a sense of completeness and fullness within yourself. Whereas with something like Christianity, that's my only bearing, apologies, it really is so much more about, like, are you being good enough? If bad things happen, like, did you pray enough? Mm-hmm. Did you do, like, maybe that was because you didn't do your penance in this particular way.
Right.
And so there's a lot of, like, I want to say, like, both individualizing, but then also laying of blame that naturally happens as well.
Yeah.
With religion. And I think, just like I said, like, spirituality is supposed to be freeing.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be freeing. And I think, like, with everything, we need to look for more leadership from the margins, right?
Totally.
Because I think that power over and oppression and spirituality don't mix. And so we can't be getting all of our spiritual leadership from people who have known such great power their whole lives.
Absolutely.
And I know for me, every aspect of spirituality that has ever resonated with me, that has ever given me anything worth having, I've been led to it by Black women. So,
right.
I mean, there is Oprah. My friend Soraya got me into astrology and tarot, which is...
Oh, no way. She was the one who got you into it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She would always post about it. And it was the first time I was like, oh, you don't have to be like a white blonde woman with dreadlocks doing yoga in order to be into this.
Yeah.
So that was where I actually got some curiosity about it, and then found sources for it that resonated with me.
Mm.
Yeah. And actually, I think she was also the first person to introduce me to the idea of ancestor reverence. Is this something you've been exposed to at all?
Something that I'm interested in, but it's something that can you talk a little bit about, just tell us a little more about ancestor
references?
Yeah,
so there's this idea that everyone has loving and wise ancestors, and that you can build relationships with them in a lot of different ways, and that includes, it can be spiritual practices, like building altars for them. There can be guided meditations. There's practitioners who actually do specific work around this. And this is a big one for me because it's interesting. So, like I said before, I wanted to believe in a spiritual dimension, but I was very skeptical. And what actually brought me to the place that I'm in now, where I feel like I don't doubt anymore, is I did something called integrative body psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just these, like, physical releases that you do that are supposed to move energy. And in the process of doing that, and that's really all it was these physical movements, this feeling of knowing, like this very tangible feeling of connectedness to a greater whole, it just arose in me somehow.
Mm.
And I've since then had what I guess you could call faith.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the spiritual ideas that came to me through that time, I've since learned that I think they seem to align with a lot of Hindu beliefs, which is really interesting to me because you'd have to go back many, many, many generations, but then my ancestors would have been
practicing
Hindu.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think how this intersects with science, because we're finding that ancestors' experiences are encoded into our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's a way that scientists have been able to observe something that we already knew through spirituality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, like, I'm intrigued by ancestor reverence. I think I really enjoy and feel comforted by this idea that I have parts of people that came before me within me, and that connectedness really, like, roots me to something bigger than myself, gives me strength to continue, makes me feel valued and valuable and courageous, because I know that, like, if they've done so much to get me here, I must be worth being here. But I haven't gotten to this place where, like, I'm gonna be real, I'm not gonna be making an altar, because that's just, for me, it's just, it's so, there's so many things, like I said, that I still need to unlearn about Christianity that make it so difficult for me to, like, swan dive wholeheartedly into doing something like that. But I do, there are certain things that my mom gave to me, like some, like, fabrics and cloths and head wraps from my grandma or from my mom, that I, like, will always want to keep with me. And it is that wrapping of my own head with it, or, you know, having it with me does connect me to something greater.
And I don't know if that's ancestor reverence, but that's my closest kind of
I think it can be. And I think, yeah, I think that also I think anything done with intention can be a ritual. And so if you're thinking about your ancestors as you're doing that wrapping, or, you know, you're looking at pictures with intention, like it doesn't have to look a specific way. It's the intention that you put towards it. And I think something that really resonates with me is, I guess in our culture, we really put so much on our parents and specifically our mothers to give us this like godlike perfect love.
Totally.
And in a lot of cultures, the ancestors have played that role instead of your human parents, who are just humans living in the world, right? Yeah. And so a lot of the angst that we have around not getting that perfect godlike love from our human mothers, that hurt that we feel, or that, you know, void that we feel, that longing that we feel, can be filled with the love of our ancestors.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah. I also think it's a really good antidote to another major barrier of spirituality that people of color experience, which is cultural appropriation.
Oh, yes.
Right? Because so many spiritual communities and practitioners, they just extract whatever they like from a tradition and wear it like a costume and try to, you know, look more exotic or magical. They take our names, they take our practices, they take our everything, right?
Yeah.
And that's really laziness, in my opinion, because it's so much easier to just dabble like that than to build real relationships
with, true.
With other people, with plants, with, like that. Herbalism, when I'd heard white people talk about it, did not interest me at all. And then people of color started talking to me about the ways that they have learned from within their own cultures about herbalism. And they talked about like building relationships with the plants, where like when they're introduced to working with a new plant, they don't get told what it is. They get given this plant, they experiment with it on their own and build a relationship and see what it feels like in their body and that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, that to me is so much more fascinating than reading, you know, a book that's supposed to make you an expert, which is a very white way of doing things, right?
Right, right. That's so interesting. I've never thought about herbalism in that context, but I remember when I was, my maternal grandma was like the sweetest woman of all time, and she passed away a few years ago. She would always, she'd watch me like cut up avocados. I would always want to toss the avocado pit, and she would like keep it because she's like, it's medicine. Like, we can make medicine out of it.
Ooh.
And it's interesting to think about, like, even her, like, her knowledge of plants now is, like, something that I have been able to be blessed with or understand a little bit more. And, like, I don't know how to make medicine out of avocado pits, but just that knowingness, like, that sense of connecting with my grandma over that. I don't know. I think there's something about herbalism that is some, like, I get it. I can understand. I can be done with that.
And then that's such a beautiful example of how, again, spirituality is really about relationships. It's relationships with our communities, with our ancestors, with plants, with the earth, all of those things. Connecting with nature is also a way that a lot of people are able to tap into the benefits of spirituality, whether or not you understand it as a spiritual practice.
Right.
I know it's really important to you. Do you understand it as a spiritual practice?
It feels like some form of like reverence. Like, it's this understanding that you're part of something bigger, right? Like, if you got gobbled up by the whole entire world, if the world disappeared, the universe would continue to exist. That's the thing, you know, like recognizing your place in something bigger. And so for me, nature, it's a really beautiful way of getting to know who you are in relation to everybody else, in relation to everything else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's so beautiful. So I would love to finish by talking about our Woman Color of the Week.
Yes.
So I want to honor Layla F. Saad. So Layla describes herself as a Black feminist, a racial justice advocate and anti-racism teacher, and a spiritual thought leader and sacred activist who is supporting people of all races to heal their internalized oppression and dismantle their externalized oppression. So as a part of this personal growth and spirituality corner of the wellness industry, Layla is in a field that's dominated by white women, and the privileged and defanged spirituality we've been talking about is very much the norm. But she's been doing really intentional and courageous and impactful work to challenge those norms and build something so much more powerful. And I think one of the most powerful things about Layla's leadership is that she's transparent about her own work, and she's taken real risks and made real sacrifices for her values. So she gained a lot of success through a brand called Wild Mystic Woman.
Mm. And then, I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. Well, and so then at a certain point, she realized that most of her audience was white women. And she realized that because of her own internalized white supremacy, she was catering to that.
Yeah.
And so she wrote an article called I Built a White Feminist Temple and Now I'm Tearing It Down, where she talks about how with hundreds of years of white supremacy making whiteness the default, if you're not consciously and intentionally building your business for people of color, then you're building it for whiteness.
Facts.
Right?
Yeah.
And so she changed her entire brand and the focus of her work, which I think is worthy of so much respect.
Mm.
So when you realize also that a lot of her support from her original brand came from white women, then you realize the risks that she took when she wrote a series of articles that went viral and got a lot of backlash called I Need to Talk to Spiritual White Women About White Supremacy. Did you ever come across this?
I think it sounds familiar, but I've never...
Yeah, never read. Yeah, and she talks about the need to stop spiritual bypassing and acting like you can love God and God's creation and somehow be silent and complacent about violence.
Which is wrong. That is false. You cannot.
Yeah, like love is fierce. Love has fangs. Love shows up.
Ooh, that's got to be a tattoo somewhere.
So Layla said that, quote, her work is driven by her powerful desire to become a good ancestor, to live and work in ways that leave a legacy of healing and liberation for those who will come after she is gone.
I love that idea of being a good ancestor. Right? That really resonates with me.
Yes. When we talk about the potentials of spiritual leadership that's political, this is it, right? Seeing that bigger picture, right. Leaving that legacy. So I want to end with one more excerpt from her work, and this time it's from something called A Love Letter to Black, Indigenous, and People of Color on Freeing Ourselves from Racist Priestesses, Fake Gurus, and White Supremacist Spiritual Teachers.
Say it, sister.
So she said, they want our practices, traditions, teachings, and wisdom, but they do not want us. They do not want the fire of our truth or the power of our medicine. They do not want to sit back and listen to us, let alone pay us, for what they feel they are entitled to, simply by virtue of holding white privilege. We will not tolerate it anymore. We will speak up. We will hold them accountable. We will call them in and out. We will demand that they do better. We will not labor for free. We will create spaces and communities that center and nurture BIPOC. We will tell it like it is. We will stop protecting oppressors and colonizers from hearing what they need to hear. We will own our stories, our art, and our magic. We will be unapologetically Black, Brown, Indigenous, people of color. We will stop censoring our voices and fearing our own power. We will do what we need to do to take care of ourselves first. We will show them what real love and light looks like, not just in our words, but through our actions, through the way that we lead and create and look after one another, through the way that we create real change in this industry and in the world.
That is so, that was like, I got chills when you read that.
Right?
I got a lot of chills when you, like, I love that so much. I need that somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm so grateful to Layla for saying all of these things and for affirming to us that we are the leaders we've been waiting for. Mm. We are the healers we've been waiting for. Mm. We are the ancestors we've been waiting for.
We're motherfucking it.
We're it.